back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our WNST coverage brought to you by our friends at Cole Roofing. I got my Cole Roofing mug with my Royal Farms coffee almost in there. I got to fill it up here because this is going to be a great conversation. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road, presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, Goodwill, and Window Nation. New sponsors. We're going to be at Conrad Seafood in Perry Hall on Friday the 6th. I've already got Rob Santoni coming by, talking about running Boston Marathons. My buddy Howard Scherer's coming by, talk about his duck cleaning business and our old DJ business from 30 years ago. And this guy and I have been talking about soccer, I think, since the minute we met, even though he's a baseball guy kind of at heart. And we do dabble in football and in all the fine business sports arts. Marty Conway joins us now. This is a little bit of an emergency session. I don't like to call Marty too much. Marty comes on about once a month. He's very generous with his time. I usually run overtime and we get down into the weeds on something. And I know we'll get to Dan Snyder and we can talk about him stealing from all his partners and what that means. But this World Cup thing, Marty, for you and your involvement over in Qatar and the last 6-8 years you've been involved, this is an unbelievable thing that we may get DC's games because their stadium stinks so much that FIFA decrees upon us. I said to Steve Goff the other day, I said, we always knew you people would need us for something. But it hasn't been much that DC's ever needed Baltimore. But here we go, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. You're right. It's you cannot underestimate how important this would be, given what's transpired at FIFA, the World Cup selection, where they've hosted all this stuff. And also the how this has transpired from a list of 30 cities, cutting it down into the 20s, and then eventually getting to 10, just 10 U.S. cities, because ultimately there'll be 16 overall between the three countries. So we'll get into that in a second. But I don't think you could underestimate the prospect of actually getting matches here in town. I think at one time there was a reasonable thought about some sponsor fan fest type activities, maybe some training centers for any one of the 40, you know, some teams that will be training in the U.S. But now I think the probability is much higher, and we'll get into why I think that is for Baltimore to be one of the few East Coast time zone cities to get 2026 World Cup matches.
All right, if you're tuning in to get like Ravens post-draft, I swear we're going to be all over that, all over all the picks. Luke and I will be into that. But Marty, just start at the beginning, because I had a conversation with Bill Cole from Cole Roofing recently, who's a big sports fan, you know, and a traditional guy's kids play soccer, the whole deal. Didn't know how many teams there were, games there were, sites there were for the traditional sports fan here. And I'm having Pete Carinci on. This has gotten me to Grant Wall's been on the show this week, trying to explain all of this after living here and loving Baltimore. He kind of still thinks we're 11th when he does his math, right? And going through why Kansas City will get games, how Seattle has a community. Like, I don't know who gets, how Philadelphia has money behind the effort with Comcast. So I feel like I've gone down the road with this, but I want Professor Conway to step in for anybody that knows nothing about this and maybe express what a big deal this is, but then also express sort of the rules in play, because I think most people need a World Cup 2026 for dummies, not even realizing that it's a three country bid. It's all North American thing. There are 48 teams, not 24 teams. I mean, there's just so much different about it that even if you were a World Cup person in 02, 06, 10, or checked out when the U.S. checked out or when Italy checked out, that things have changed dramatically, and we're about to watch them go to Qatar and do this, and you've been involved intimately in that. So I want you to play professor here, and I'll try to shut up and ask smart questions.
Yeah, so in 2010, when Qatar was awarded the 2022 World Cup, the United States lost in that ballot process. They were one of the finalists to host the 2022 World Cup, and they lost. So just as you said, backing up, two big things have occurred. Number one, the expansion of the World Cup from 32 teams to 48 teams. That's an additional 16 games, 16 teams, obviously. It's an additional 16 games. It also means just a larger footprint for the World Cup, and that's going to change substantially who and how it gets hosted in the future. This is the first, the only time the World Cup has been shared between countries was 2002, when Japan and Korea co-hosted the World Cup. Every other time, it's a single nation. Unlike the Olympics that go to a city, the World Cup goes to a country. And so if you just look back, since Germany hosted in, so we had 2002 in Japan, Korea, then we had 2006 in Germany, and then the World Cup took a tour that is actually hard now to describe, although at the time we knew what they were trying to do. They went to South Africa in 2010. They went to Brazil in 2014. They went to Russia in 2018. And now they're in Qatar in 2022. It's what we have referred to partially as the BRIC plus Q World Cup. And that is, FIFA wanted to expand the footprint for the world's largest sporting event. Keep in mind that in a world of 7.5 billion people, almost 4 billion people will watch some form of the World Cup. Maybe not the final, but they will tune into at least one match along the way. So half the world's population will be tuned in 2026 at least. And so there were, obviously we've talked about it, there have been a number of scandals. South Africa had their own scandals. Obviously, Brazil had uprising. We know what Russia was like, and we know what the issues have been going into building essentially an entire new part of the city in Doha for Qatar to host the World Cup.
And you've been there and witnessed that, right? You've literally seen that happen.
When I first went there in 2014 and 2015, it was like, if people remember this, if they're old enough to remember, when you went to Disney World and they were building Epcot. That's kind of what it was. You're like, they're building a whole new thing over there. There are dozens of cranes. I know it's going to be wonderful, and I'll be able to spend days there to do it. We didn't know what it was at the time, but it's turned into Epcot Center. And that's what I saw when I first went there, was cranes upon cranes on the horizon, not just building stadiums, obviously, but also erecting other things. And they're probably still going to come up short. They're going to come up short in hotels. They're going to come up short in some other areas, training facilities, for example. So it's going to be unique. It's, you know, there's going to be 8 stadiums all within about a 90-minute drive from point to point, farthest point to farthest point.
Well, I would think really, for whatever the FIFA people, after all the corruption, the people that really have to do the work, the people like you, not the kings and queens and Sepp Blatter and the guys taking the bag of money from Chuck Blazer, but the real workers, and that's why you were there, is because they had no structure on how to sell tickets because they've never had a sports league in Qatar, right? So these speculative and corrupt bags of money into places like Russia, even Brazil, and Qatar, building all of this and the speculative nature of how much uncertainty probably has led to the committee looking at the DC stadium and saying, I like the Baltimore stadium better because it's built. Like, because they have been playing these games for 12 years where they're building stadiums in the middle of jungles a year before they're to host games. You're telling me Qatar right now, whatever it is what it is, because the games are coming soon, right?
Yeah. And so in 2010, built stadiums in South Africa that virtually haven't been used. Obviously, we know Brazil was the same way. Russia did it. Russia poured $50 billion into infrastructure. They have a modest professional league there and some other things. And they have, up until a few months ago, they had been on the list to host some other things, the UEFA championships and different things like that. But that's not going to happen anymore. And so they were looking for a return to stability, and coinciding with the fact that I said, we're going to expand to 48 teams for the first time, that changes the nature of who and how can host the World Cup. The first time they're returning to North America, to, you know, if you look at Canada, if you look at the United States, you look at Mexico, you virtually have to build no stadiums. They can move in tomorrow if they wanted to play the World Cup. They could probably do it in about 90 days if they needed to amongst those three countries. That's going to change the nature of who can host the World Cup going forward. I think future bids for an expanded World Cup will come from really established football, the global name for it, football nations. So you're probably looking at the UK, between England, Scotland, and Wales, and maybe Ireland hosting as well. And other established countries that can host a scale, because again, I said, you're talking about bringing 16 more teams, 16 more fan bases, 16 more training centers. One of the things that happened in Brazil was there's such a rivalry between these competitors. Like, so for example, England and Germany have a fierce rivalry period whenever they play, but just a fierce rivalry between countries. Germany felt so strongly about their preparation, and this is what something the Germans would be expected to do. They felt so strongly about their preparation in Brazil as to where they were going to train and then travel, right? That's an important part of, you know, if you're playing the first three matches in a round robin, where are you going to play and how much travel you're going to have? Germany essentially built their own training center. There was no universities in Brazil that could accommodate what they wanted. They came in, spent money, built their own training center. And then when it was over, turned around and said to the Brazil Football Federation, here you go, here's the keys, do whatever you want with it. There are nations like that that will spend that kind of money on a training center.
And that's a 6-week thing, right, Marty? I mean, yeah, you're expected to be, because I had questions about this. Bill Cole said, so, you know, fans come in for like a weekend or two, or like, how does this work? No. And I'm like, No. This is as Red Fox would say, Fred G. Sam, this is the big one. You know, this is this is bigger than a Super Bowl. And I don't know, bigger, and you know, any comparison to that IRL sham that was put forth here a decade ago. This is a different gig. Yeah. And how we slid in on this last week and this thing happened, and it feels a little orchestrated by FIFA and by the Federation, right? To say we want DC to be in. The only way it's going to happen is if Baltimore's in. That's why it feels like, wow, this is an inside job to some degree. And I know there would never be an inside job at FIFA, but it feels to me like a little bit of a setup that we're, we're very fortunate if this were to happen, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. So in putting this together, FIFA does extensive, they had hoped to have this announced in 2021, but clearly just like everything else, COVID and a pandemic put them in first to a virtual tour that they did, preliminary tour with potential host cities. Remember, there's already been one cut, and a couple of cities like Chicago dropped out on their own. So there's already been one cut of cities in North America. And then in late 2021, they did their on-site visits. I think it was September in Baltimore, if I'm not mistaken. And they were wrapping up the rest of their late 21, early 22. So had hoped to have this decision in Q1 of 2022. Now we're obviously into Q2, and I think that decision will come. We're now at the end of April. I think that decision will come by the end of June as to which cities in North America are hosting. And in that criteria, there are a couple of big things, but the what FIFA calls the technical requirements, right? The facility, the ability to train, that is where probably 60 to 70% of the grading of a location comes from. Because at the end of the day, this is about hosting the world's best football teams, and those stadia have to be up to that level, or ability to be brought up to that level with modest investments. And that is where you have to tip your hat to Maryland legislature, Maryland Stadium Authority, the Baltimore Ravens, people associated with the stadium, that for an initial $200 million investment to open the stadium in the late 90s, have invested almost $300 million since then, maybe more, to keep the facility continually upgraded. You know, you're talking about the glitzy things like scoreboards and sound systems, but there are also other things in there. They've hosted friendly matches. They've hosted Gold Cups. They've hosted a number of things that are FIFA regulations, so to understand. And going, so that's probably 60 or 70% of Baltimore's bid would be based on the quality of the technical specs. And then you get into things like proximity of the stadium to the airport, very good for Baltimore. Proximity of hotels to the stadium. You could actually have a host central hotel literally less than a mile from the stadium, maybe even more than one hotel for that. And again, that's really important for FIFA, because they come in and they essentially take over the city. You won't know that it's M&T Stadium. Everything related to M&T will be covered. Every piece of corporate sponsorship will be covered. I mean, they literally take care of different things like that. Now, pivoting down the road. So yes, at one time, Washington was a rival bidder. And again, I would have said a year ago, matches in DC because FIFA prefers, where else are you going to have an opening match to the World Cup other than the nation's capital, the most powerful city in the world? That would have, I think, been their desire. And then end it in New York with a final match in the largest city in the United States. But what happened was these two stadiums opened in virtually around the same time. They're about 25 years old, but Landover FedEx Field has fallen into such disrepair because of the lack of the team investing in it. So you got to give Steve Bisciotti and Dick Cass and that crew a whole lot of kudos for maintaining it, the infrastructure, adding to it.
And neither one really, from an investment standpoint, 30 years in, they don't have a lot of events at either one of those stadia. Like, no, like you know, U2 comes in once in a while, McCartney might drop by, Billy Joel, whatever, the Stones, and all that's going away. And unless you get a lacrosse match or unless you're bringing Ohio State in to play Navy, what the hell are you putting in a stadium other than, to your point, some friendlies? I mean, DC's had games down there. They've had big games down there. We've had a couple up here, but apparently everything about that stadium is offensive, from the toilets flushing, all of that, right?
And again, so yes, I think the things that we know about, and they have, they've hosted, Brazil has played games there. They've had all sorts of friendly matches, big concert. Two things. Number one, they took the capacity down from almost 90,000 to now it's in the 60s, I guess. Haven't been there in a couple of years to see what's actually transpired. But the second thing too, is in addition to the failures of the facility, there just isn't an infrastructure around it. There's not a quality hotel or hotels nearby enough that compared to Baltimore. We know what the airport situation would be. It's not really situated near National or BWI. So there's a lot of different things. And so I think the script has flipped. And that would be FanFest types events in the nation's capital. Look, every embassy in the world is in Washington, D.C. And so if you're going to have 48 teams there, you're going to have 48 embassies, 47, not counting the U.S., that are going to want to do something related to their team being in the World Cup in the United States. And what a perfect place for them to do that in Washington, D.C. So to your point, I do think FIFA, knowing what they do, is they tend to orchestrate this. And we'll go into what I think the East Coast cities likely are to be selected. Because keep in mind, this is going to the world. So think about time zones. Think about what it is in the East Coast versus West Coast, what that means for Japan, for Qatar, for other places, because these matches have to be transmitted out from those stadiums into the rest of the world in reasonable time zones where people aren't expected to be up unless there's no other choice.
Like we were back in 02 watching the U.S. play Mexico at 3:30 in the morning. Remember that one?
They want the most exposure for the World Cup as possible. And so, again, over time, I think FIFA, the focus on the technical specs for the stadium has helped flip the script and put Baltimore in a better position, because the competition isn't between Baltimore. And so I would perhaps object a little bit to what your other guest said of whether they're comparing Baltimore to Kansas City or to Houston or whatever. It's not. Baltimore's competition is right along the Eastern Seaboard. So right now, New York is a shoe-in to host the final match. The other cities on the East Coast, going from top to bottom, Toronto, and again, East Coast time zone, but in Canada, is one of the three cities that Canada will definitely have. It looks like Vancouver will be their second on the West Coast, and then a third one to be determined. So Toronto is likely to be the Canadian East Coast city. So now you have American cities other than New York, which are Boston, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Washington now united. Then you get down to Atlanta and you go down to Miami. And if you keep
Orlando. You don't like Orlando.
Well, Orlando's in there. So let me
Cincinnati's in there too, by the way. They are.
But I'm talking about sort of coastal type situations. And what I think is likely to happen, Atlanta is quite likely to have like a semifinal match. I think the semifinal matches will either be two of three cities, LA, Dallas, or Atlanta. I think LA is a shoe-in to get games. I don't know whether they'll get semifinal matches. Final match in New York, semifinals either in LA Dallas or Atlanta. What's that leave? That leaves Boston. That leaves a combined Philadelphia is also still in the running. That leaves a combined Boston, Baltimore, Washington combined bid. And that leaves Orlando and that leaves Miami. Ultimately, I think here's how they're going to settle. I think it's going to be Toronto. I think it's going to be Boston. Obviously, New York is a shoe-in. I don't think Philadelphia gets selected. I do think Baltimore gets selected to combine with Washington. And then I think it's Miami. I think those are the East Coast cities that FIFA finally selects. And then the rest of that comes from the Midwest. I think Denver gets involved. There's going to be a question about, do they do Houston and Dallas? You know, I think that's unlikely. I think Dallas takes over that sort of space. And so those are some of the jockeying. You know, if they decided to do two in Texas and do Dallas and Houston, then I don't know whether they'll knock out Kansas City or Nashville, or they'll come for an East Coast city. But I do think that's what they're looking for in terms of time zone. So I think, as we started the conversation, that elbow nudge that said, hey, Baltimore, Washington, why don't you guys get together? I think that was a clear signal that we'd like to come to your location. We just need to figure that out between the two of you.
Marty Conway's here. He is the good professor at Georgetown University, longtime MLB insider and executive. And give everybody your background on in working on this World Cup in Qatar, because are you going to Qatar? I mean, I don't know all of the infrastructure of your business and consulting and what you've done there, but I know you were, you know, knee deep in it before the plague. And I'm assuming if there weren't a plague, you probably would have been over there a couple of times the last couple
of
years.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the things became virtual during that time period, and there wasn't the ability to widely travel, obviously, in that region as well. But what we were doing through the university was, as you mentioned earlier, establishing an infrastructure. Look, they've hosted other events there. I don't want to leave people the impression that they haven't hosted other major events. All of that, though, since the announcement of hosting the World Cup, they've hosted what's called the Asian Games, which is kind of a downscale version of the Olympics for the Asian Federation, the Asian swing there, West and East Asia. They also recently hosted the World Athletics Championships, which is, when you look at the scale of the Olympics, you look at the World Cup, then you look at the World Athletics Track and Field Championship, because it can bring in people from all over the world, and you've got to bring in not only athletes, but their officials and other things like that. So they've been building up to this, to have this, but literally in a country of around 2.5 million, roughly, maybe a little bit more, million people, of which only 300 or so thousand are actually Qataris. Everyone else is an expat of some sort. You have to think about, how do we host? Like, who takes your ticket? Who helps you to your seat? Who does some of these other things that they have had no infrastructure for? This isn't Disney World, where they're trained in hospitality. Most Qataris don't work in service businesses. So every service business you go into in the country, you're likely to have some form of expat, Egyptian, or whatever, working there. So that was, you know, building that, credentialing people, doing all sorts of things necessary to do that. And then secondarily, one of the legacies they want to leave is they want to leave not only a physical infrastructure, but a sporting and sport management infrastructure as well, so that people could grow up in that country and aspire to some role other than a ceremonial role in global sports. And I also think they're last year and this year, they're hosting a Formula One event for the first time. There's a huge competitive circumstance there between Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar at the moment, but some other countries, Kuwait and others, will be thrown in. And to their point, and I saw their Supreme Committee, which is their sort of host committee, speak at the FIFA Congress a month or two ago. They talk about, this is the first time the World Cup will be hosted in what they call their land. And what they mean is the Arab population. They have been excluded from the World Cup, even though teams like Egypt and other countries have from time to time shown up well in the World Cup. So how can you have a population in a region of millions of people aspire to a World Cup if they can't see it, if they can't go to it? It's like when we hosted the World Cup in 1994, for the first time, when it came to North America for the for the United States to host. That launched Major League Soccer. That launched a lot of things related to women's soccer, right? We had the Women's World Cup here in 1999. So it can be a transformational event, of like a launch event for sporting culture, particularly one for soccer slash football.
Trying to pull a schedule up here for, you know, when this is happening, because this is real this year for all of us. We'll be watching soccer in the winter. And then 4 years out, this all happens. Marty, Marty Conway's here, the good professor at Georgetown. You can follow him at Marty Conway on Twitter, as well as LinkedIn and other places. Before I take us off the soccer pitch, this last 6 weeks here, or whenever it's going to be till we get to June, where this decision gets made, what influences this? Because I was led to believe Philadelphia is going to have more money than some of the other places. Santa Clara is in on this. Seattle has a base. Like, the competition is serious. Also, L.A., where I was just out at that beautiful stadium, and apparently the Kroenke and the NFL were so arrogant, they didn't build the place to ever have a soccer game in it. So they're going to have problems there, and they have the Rose Bowl. So you mentioned Houston and Dallas. There's a lot of competition, but there's also, if you're in with the nation's capital and they ask you to get in, we must smell better than somebody. They must have some idea of what they want to do. But I'm wondering how money, politics, whatever would affect this over the next 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah, well, there's no question. Anytime you can't see something, how it's decided, right? You can't see how the sausage is made. You should have some suspicion. But as I said, I think what you're starting to see is alliances sort of develop, right? So, for example, I think it's going to be very difficult for them to turn down Robert Kraft in New England for a lot of reasons, influence, power, NFL type other things. So I think for a lot of reasons that, but you also have ethnicities. You know, you look at the South, look at Miami, look at Dallas, look at Houston. Like I said, a difficult decision there. You notice Arizona is not in this circumstance, or San Diego, or other places like that. So there are a lot of other influences, but it comes down to technical facilities, the ability for FIFA to make money, and the way they make money is in media and sponsorships, and then inclusion. And again, I think that the draw for Washington and Baltimore is a combined bid that brings diplomats, that brings all sorts of emphasis to this area, and it's easy. So the other thing too is you're going to have 48 teams that'll be playing in 16 pods of three teams, and you're going to want to see those teams essentially. They may play two matches in Seattle and one in LA, right? They're not going to be going from Baltimore to Seattle, I don't think, to play their third match at that point. And so you're looking for different combinations and permutations that include where can teams train? How easy is it for them to train or to fly to get to their location to do that? So sponsorship, you're talking about how much merchandise can they sell. The other thing too is keep in mind, all this becomes tax-free to FIFA. They don't pay taxes. So you've got to give them.
Where does that money go? Like at the end of the day, who's Mr. Big in raking all that dough in?
Well, FIFA collects all, probably around $6 billion now every 4 years. They work just like the Olympics in a four-year quadrennium, around $6 billion. And of that, FIFA retains only 10% for their operations. The rest of it goes out to, look, there are 211 football federations in the world. There are more football federations in the world than there are countries represented at the United Nations. That's how important it is. So money is going to places in Africa and the Caribbean and small countries in Asia to support football in general. But look, the next big issue is how much bigger can the Women's World Cup be? Right now, the United States and Japan and Germany, to some extent, have dominated the Women's World Cup because there's been 16, 24 teams. They're going to get that to 32. They need to get that up much more in terms of overall emphasis on football. So that's where that money goes back out to. Between sponsorship and media, that's about 80% of all the revenues that they bring in. Tickets is not a huge deal. Merchandise, like I said, it's nice. It's important. The other thing too, hospitality and the ability to have suites and other things. And again, that's why I think M&T comes up really strong. really strong ability to have hospitality in and around the stadium, because FIFA draws a lot of dollars from those type of sources. So all those things go into it. But again, if I had to pull back, I'd say two things. I'd say the technical specs of M&T Stadium are stronger than virtually any stadium that they're up against. And number two, that sort of magnetory pull of Washington, where diplomats could, you know, get in their chauffeur-driven cars and come from their embassy on Massachusetts Avenue and make it to their match in Baltimore and have a fan fest event at their embassy or on the National Mall or other areas like that. I think that, you know, Baltimore might even see the opening match, like if that were the possibility.
Well, we did have the Star Spangled Banner here. Why not, right?
Exactly. So there you go.
There you go. Little Fort McHenry, a flyover. I like that. Marty Conway flying in and over all things World Cup 2026. Yes, we'll talk Ravens draft picks and draft, and we'll be doing all that. The Dan Snyder thing, while we're on this, and just the opportunity for the Ravens and our city and the stadium, and we've kept our stadium up. They haven't kept their stadium up. They haven't kept much up, right? And now this latest allegation of scamming from your partners and sort of what that represents.
Yeah. So the allegations here, and again, this is really, really backroom ticketing, backroom inside football, so to speak, which is, as we referred to earlier, when you're hosting eight up to this point in the NFL prior to an expanded season, eight home games, two preseason games. And then in addition, what else have they been doing there? They've had, like I said, global football matches. They've had Navy Notre Dame football games. They've had all sorts of Kenny Chesney concerts. I mean, just you name it. They've been really aggressive in acquiring events like that. The allegation at its core is that they, as part of selling seats back then in the original, when it was built, just like in Baltimore, you had seat licenses and you had other than just day of game type sales. Well, in addition to those seat licenses, you made a deposit that you would get back at the end of your 10 years if you didn't renew or whatever. Well, according to what we've all seen published, there was some lack of integrity, I'll say, in that regard, which is some people either didn't claim their deposits back or didn't know about it, whatever. And those that money, which might have been several million dollars, was reallocated essentially to the Redskins Corporation, as opposed to being allocated towards the football dollars, which then get pushed to, because in the NFL, you share your ticket revenue with the league, and a portion of that, a big portion of that, gets sent to the league central fund and gets shared with all the teams. It's not a lot of money to the NFL. They make far more in media and sponsorships, but it is several million dollars. So the allegations are that in that mix, people were told to what they call take the juice, meaning money that was sort of left over, and say it was for Navy Notre Dame or say it was for something else. There are a couple things. Number one, the questions is that a criminal offense? It doesn't seem to be on its face a criminal offense, even though I think both Virginia and Maryland attorney generals are looking into it. It may be more of a FTC, sort of a Federal Trade Commission, you know, fine type thing if you misallocated. Now, again, if you were fraudulent with your customers, that's clearly a problem. But a lot of times it doesn't lead to a criminal offense. It leads to more of a civil penalty. Now, the issue is within the league, what could have happened there in terms of the sharing among partners? So, and it, look, it I call this the Watergate of the NFL. It wasn't the initial problem, whether it was sexual harassment allegations or others. It's what happened after. It's the cover up. And in this case, we now have Washington, an oversight committee in the legislature, Congress, who's turned it over to the FTC. And now we read that both Virginia and DC, I think specifically, not Maryland, attorneys general are looking into the commanders' allegations. That's never good. The NFL does not want to have anything revealed. They take every lawsuit, Brian Flores, the most recent example, and they turn that into a closed arbitration. They don't want it. St. Louis sale almost spilled over into the public, and they had to end up settling for, I think, $900 million or something like that. So the NFL hates transparency. They fight like crazy against it. And this is their worst nightmare in Washington. Washington used to be a place when Jack Kent Cook owned the team where they could host, NFL could host politicians and important influencers in Washington. Heads of state, cabinet officials, presidents, vice presidents would come to football games on a beautiful Sunday in Washington. And that has just gone away, period. That's something that the NFL needs to get back. And if they do make a decision to change ownership in Washington, it'll have a lot to do with the fact that they are losing influence in DC, and that's not something they can afford to have continue.
Marty Conway is the good professor at Georgetown University. Please follow him out on Twitter and LinkedIn for more wise conversations and intelligence. Well, hey, listen, we got baseball going on, draft, all sorts of things are happening, but this news of World Cup to Baltimore would be bigger than big, and I just wanted to take some time here this week to educate our audience as to all of it, because a lot of it is a little bit like Chinese arithmetic for folks. They don't really understand a lot of this. It's all sort of new, but it is exciting, and it's a big deal. Marty, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
All right, man. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill Industries and Window Nation moves to Conrad Seafood in Perry Hall. We'll be there on Friday, May 6th. Hope you come out from 2 until 5 and say hello. Get a crab cake with us. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.